Hello everyone and welcome to the Cure Panel Talk Show. I'm Priya Menon, Scientific Media Editor at Cure Talk, Cure Panel, joining you from India. And I welcome all of you this evening to Cure Panel's on-air myeloma support group meeting. This is our live on-air support group meeting headed by myeloma survivor, author, advocate Pat Killingsworth. Cure Panel's on-air myeloma support group meets every month on the Cure Panel Talk Show. The show is broadcast live on Blog Talk Radio. Today we have with us myeloma survivors and advocates Pat Killingsworth, Cynthia Schmilewski, and our guests for the show are Jim and Kathleen Bond. James T. Bond II and Kathleen M. Bond are myeloma ambassadors. Jim is a retired Ernst and Young partner. He has actively lived with multiple myeloma for 22 years and leukemia for 2 years. Kathleen is chair of the American Cancer Society East Central Board, trustee of the Oncology Nursing Society Foundation Board, director of the Oncology Nurse Society Foundation and the ACS Cleveland Hope Lodge Board, and formerly served as the ACS National Board of Directors. Kathleen founded the ACS Pan-Ohio Hope Ride, a four-day cycling tour, and Jim has cycled 328 miles across Ohio each of his 7 years, and he is training to ride again this July. I will now hand over to Pat to commence the meeting, but before that, I would like to remind our listeners that they can press 1 on their keypad to join the conversation and share the views and experiences with us. Pat, over to you. You're on air.
Hi, Priya.
Hi,
I'm
Pat.
I'm hearing some crackling type of interference. Do you hear that?
I was hearing that too a little bit. This is Cindy. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Cindy.
Is it? I'll try to see what that is, Pat.
Okay, thank you. So, Cindy, we've got you here. Mary, are you here? No Mary yet. Mary Ann Mosley.
No, Mary
hopefully
is not
will be
here
joining
either.
Us later from California. Jim and Kathleen, are you here?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I do, Jim. You're a little faint.
Pat, can you hear me? It's Kathleen.
I hear you loud and clear, Kathleen.
Okay.
Hi, Kathleen. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Cindy?
I'm doing great.
I'm so glad to hear that. It's a pleasure to be with you all.
Thanks for taking the time. Jim, why don't you try again? Can we hear you? Well, I'm sure we'll get all this figured out. We don't always have this many technical difficulties, although I got to tell you, it's always something.
Is this better if I speak into this phone?
Much better.
Yeah, so much better.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, I'll do that.
Good. Well, welcome, everybody. And you know, it is challenging on these broadcasts a little bit because we can't see each other. You know, there isn't a monitor. We don't have earbuds. So sometimes we talk over each other. Sometimes there are little glitches. But all in all, I think we're able to share some wonderful information. And we have to be approaching our one-year anniversary for our myeloma on-air support groups. I'm not sure exactly when that will be. I'm sure Priya can tell us. But Cindy's been with us in a couple of them. And it's nice. Sometimes people call in, sometimes they don't, but by the end of the month, after about 30 days, between 2,000 and 3,000 people have listened to the broadcast. So I think they help, and that's what it's all about, right, gang?
I think that's right.
So, well, let's start. You know, I'd like to start with Kathleen, because a caregiver is so often an afterthought. So we're going to give Kathleen the lead-off position here, and could you share a little bit about your life with Jim and my goodness, now it's over 20 years, isn't it, Kathleen?
22 and counting. And Jim and I...
And now that's been since he's been diagnosed, to clarify, right? That's...
Right, 22 and counting since diagnosis. And this September, Jim and I will be celebrating our 44th wedding anniversary. So we're at the halfway point through our marriage, where half of our married life has been spent with a third partner, and that's been multiple myeloma.
Oh, I just lost a good friend. If hopefully more survivors will live so long. That's just wonderful. I'm so glad it's worked out.
Well, it was a long story, and I won't go through the whole story. But Jim was diagnosed in 1992. And as so many of you, you probably went through, we had never heard of multiple myeloma. And we were, like everyone, you know, it was the kick in the stomach, everything you've ever heard from everybody. And we decided we were going to get after it and not let this thing dominate our life. And so we decided we were going to just keep making plans and keep putting one foot in front of the other, and we really were pretty clueless about what was in front of us, and we just marched on. But we did, I know me, for me, the important thing was learning everything I could about the disease. For me, getting information was empowering, and I also decided I was not only going to get mad at this disease, but get even and learn everything I possibly could. And I was able to actually go to the medical school library here in Cleveland, Ohio, at Case Western, and gather information. And it was hugely helpful. And that was back in the days before computers. If you recall, there was a Medline back in those days, and you could get articles from medical journals. And I used to print those things out, and some librarian took pity on me because she knew I wasn't a medical student. But I would come home, and I would read them and highlight it. And it was the days of the tractor feed paper. And lo and behold, a couple months later, I'd want to reference something, and the ink disappeared because it was thermal paper. So I just had yellow lines all over everything. But doing what I could to find out the facts about the disease did help me to ask better questions. And Jim and I also were able to get in touch with the doctors that we determined seemed to be the top five authorities in the disease, because they were the ones that were always mentioned or had written the articles. So we were able to compose a short fax, and that was back in the day when people ran in with faxes because they seemed important. I got the fax numbers of these doctors from the various hospitals, and we faxed them a simple letter. Jim said, I'm a 43-year-old male diagnosed with stage 4 multiple myeloma, light chain only. Here's what they're telling me in Cleveland I should do. What would you do if you were me? Amazingly, we heard back from two of those docs that afternoon and eventually heard from all five. And we have maintained our relationship with these docs, almost all of them, to this day. And they have been a great resource for us. So that was hugely helpful. And the other thing that we realized early on was the importance of trying to stay even. And by that, I mean with all the good news and more often than not, the bad news that we got, we tried not to let ourselves get into the peaks and valleys. And that is really easy to say, but very hard to do. And when we would get bad news, we would say, okay, well, you know what, that's today, that's right now. Who do we need to talk to? What do we need to do? And we just kind of pull it up so we were somewhere in the middle. And by the same token, if we got good news, we would say to each other out loud, now don't get too giddy, because that can change. And we do that to this day, and it has taken a lot of practice, and we coach each other to say, hey, don't get too giddy or don't get too down. Let's see what, you know, so-and-so says. Let's see what tomorrow brings. And it's really helped us avoid the extremes of the hideous roller coaster that you always hear everybody refer to as cancer. And that's been very helpful. But we have to work at it, and we've had 22 years of practice working at it. The other thing that I think has been helpful for me as the caregiver, when I am gathering information and Jim and I discuss next steps and we discuss the next steps with the doctor, we make our decision based on the facts that we could gather at the time and the information we have at the time. Once we make a decision, that's it. We do not look back. There's no point in second guessing. We move forward We did what we could at the time, and there's no point in looking backwards. And we've held on to that for 22 years. The other thing that we do is we've instituted an 8 p.m. rule. And our 8 p.m. rule, and it's a good thing this call isn't later, our 8 p.m. rule is at 8 o'clock at night. It doesn't matter what's happening. And Jim could even be in the hospital going through some kind of treatment. At 8 o'clock at night, we are done with cancer. It does not exist in our world. We will not talk about it anymore. Our family and friends know not to call us because we're not going to talk about it after 8 o'clock. And I have to tell you, Pat and Cindy, that when we first instituted this rule, it was actually a 9 p.m. rule. And now we're just older and we can't stay awake. So in order for us to have some sort of evening, we had to move it to 8 o'clock. But it works for us because then we can have a normal evening and whatever it might be, watching something silly on TV, you know, if I'm folding laundry, whatever it is, cancer is not in our world. We know, however, the next morning we're going to be back at it. But it has helped us hugely. It helped us actually to get a better sleep at night. There were times when Jim was in the hospital. 2 years ago, Jim was in the hospital for 75 days. That's when he was dealing with the AML, the leukemia. And at 8 o'clock at night, he would say to me, well, do you want to go home or do you want to sit here and watch TV? And, you know, I'd make that decision. And it really helped us. It truly has. The other thing that we've done is we have point people in our different spheres of relationships. And I'm not one to get on and do a lot of emails. I do email, but I'm not going to report to everybody every night on email. But I do have a couple people in each of our spheres of influence and relationships that I will let know what's going on. And that just takes the burden off me. And that's been hugely helpful. I think the other thing that you hear everybody say, and it's very important, is if you're the caregiver, you have to take care of yourself. Because this is a marathon. You're in it for the long haul, and you've got to take care of yourself. And there are days where that's easier to do than other days, but you have to make time for yourself and maybe get together with a friend, have coffee. You can sit there and cry and laugh and, you know, talk about it. But it's really important that you have that outlet. And I try to do that. And exercise as well, eat well, do what you can.
Now, I like the 8 p.m. rule. I think I'm going to have to start instituting that.
Oh, it has worked so well for us. And I'll tell you what, it actually works for other things in life. So we've used it for other things that we've been fretting over. But the 8 p.m. rule has really been helpful. And the other thing that I thought was really the most stunning for me, I was not one to go to a support group. In fact, there weren't any. So there was no group to go to. And there weren't programs like this. So we were pretty much on our own, and I would frequently ask Jim's doctor, do you have anybody to point toward that we could talk to? And he really did not, and that was pretty scary for us. But the thing that I found probably the hardest was after Jim's first transplant. And over the course of these 22 years, Jim has had 4 transplants. The first one was in 93, it was an auto. The second one was in 99, it was an auto. They were separate collections. Then in 2001, he had a transplant using his sister's cells. She was a perfect match. That bought him some time. And then with the AML in 2012, he had his 4th transplant, which was a matched unrelated donor. Well, with all that going on, I think after that first transplant, which was actually Jim did very well through it and set a record for the fastest anybody had been in the transplant unit. But when he got out, he was back at work the next month, not hooked to anything, not taking anything, not having to go anywhere except to work, and it was great. I hit the wall. I did not know what to do with myself. I was frantic that we weren't doing anything because I knew this disease was likely coming back. And I was scared to death because there wasn't any maintenance. There was nothing. And I was badgering his doctor about, shouldn't we be doing something? And there was nothing to be done at that point except let it ride. Well, I was a wreck, an absolute wreck. And I was really shocked that that was happening. And I really was struggling until one day when the phone rang Jim had gone to work. He'd been gone maybe an hour. And the phone rings, and it's Jim. And Jim says to me, "I'm okay, honey, but your car isn't." And I said, "What?" And it turned out someone had gone through a light. He T-boned him on the driver's side. And I started screaming into the phone, "How could you do that? How could you have an accident after all we've been through?" And that's when it hit me. I thought, you know what? I've really lost my mind, but there for the grace of God are all of us. And I have to tell you, it was a pink Buick that slammed into him. And I was thinking, you know, who's got a pink Buick? And again, my apologies to all the Mary Kay people out there, if they perhaps do. But this pink Buick, actually, it turned out, was in our neighborhood somewhere. Someone lived around us, and I used to see it. But it was a constant reminder of just appreciate what you've got today and how fortunate we've been. So that's a long answer to your question, Pat.
Well, that tends to work the best in this format, and we don't have to have these pauses, you know, trying to figure out who's going to talk without any way to really coordinate the thing. So I appreciate that, and I also appreciate the fact that you've given our listeners some actual advice and tips on, you know, that doesn't happen very often. That was awesome. Thank you. And I have to say I've never heard Jim this quiet. Yes, Jim, you still there?
I am, Pat, and Kathleen is my secret weapon. And as you can tell from my name, I am the real James Bond. And now that you've listened to Kathleen, and if you see her live, you'll know that she's a beautiful Bond girl, and that's the proof
she
that
is.
I'm the real.
I've met her. Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, there's a lot of movie actors, but she's a real one. And anyhow, thank you, Kathleen. You were awesome as always. A couple comments to fill in a little bit. When I was diagnosed, I asked the diagnosing oncologist here in Cleveland where we live, I said, "How long do you think I'll live?" And he said, "Jim, if you do nothing, you'll probably live a few months. If you do everything available," this is back in 92, "you'll probably live 2 or 3 years." And we were stunned, as Kathleen said, and as you said, that was 22 years ago. So really, what motivated us to go at it? It was really other challenges that I looked back in my life, and I said, you know what? They turned out okay. So I'm going to treat this like another challenge, give it my best shot. And that started with asking the diagnosing oncologist the second question. If you were in my shoes, would you have you treat me or some other oncologist? And that really was a winning comment, because he said, you know, "Jim, now that you ask me, there's a doctor in another hospital across the street that sees more myeloma patients than I do. And if I were you, I'd go to him." And that was a 10-year winning comment. That got me 10 years, got me through 3 of the transplants, and virtually all the treatments that were on the market at that time. But in 02, I was out of options, and I was advised to go to a hospice. And here's the value of a second opinion that Kathleen mentioned. We learned of a clinical trial that was showing good results back in 02 for very sick myeloma patients like me. And I asked my doctor, "What about that trial?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, I know about that, Jim, but there's no openings." And so I said, "Well, look, I'm going to try." And he was a little bit miffed that I would challenge him and walked out of the room. He actually said, "You're wasting your time," which I found humorous. Anyhow, I was lucky enough to get in an out-of-town clinical trial. It happened to be in Boston at Dana-Farber. And when I arrived, I was very sick, so sick that Kathleen wasn't sure I was going to get through the night. But I did. And the clinical trial had amazing results. Within 2 weeks, 99% of my monoclonal went into remission, and I was back on my feet, back to work. And when the myeloma came back, as I know mine will, I did 2 more clinical trials, and that got me 10 more years. So you might imagine I'm a huge believer in clinical trials. And one thing I've learned is there's a real obstacle to a lot of folks, and that's the cost of out-of-town lodging, if you have to do that. And here's where the American Cancer Society comes in. They have over 30 Hope Lodges across the country. And Kathleen's highly involved in those. In fact, that's why she founded, this bike ride across Ohio, the Pan Ohio Hope Ride, to raise funds and awareness so other people can stay free at Hope Lodges and have the access that I've been fortunate enough to have. So back in 07, I did not cycle. She didn't cycle. I went out and bought a bike after watching her passion, and I made it all 328 days the first year, and I've done it a total of 7 years now, and I'm training right now for number 8 this summer. I get asked, is cycling 328 miles hard to do? I've got some issues, and I say, yeah, it's hard, but guess what? Fighting cancer is harder, and I don't need to reinforce that to the people listening. We all know it is. But after the 2012 Pan Ohio Hope Ride, my counts were not quite right in the ride, but I got through the ride okay. But a couple months after the ride, I was diagnosed with leukemia, treatment-related AML. And they said, Jim, your only hope is another transplant, which, as Kathleen said, was number 4 from an unrelated donor, if we can find one. But don't get your hopes up, because it's a long road. Well, they did. They were successful in getting the AML down to an acceptable level for a transplant, and they did locate a donor. And I thought I was set, and they said, no, we're not sure you can live through another transplant because of the 3 you've had before and other things. So I pleaded my case, and they came back the next day with a decision. They said, Jim, the winning stroke was the fact that you did the Pan Ohio Hope Ride 2 months ago. That convinced everybody, you have the strength and stamina to get through this transplant. So on Halloween of 2012, I got the Germans. By Christmas, they called and said, good news, you're in remission for both of your cancers, where I've been ever since. Let me take a sip of water here, Pat. Yeah, it feels good. So I'm tremendously grateful to the donor and to the program Be the Match, which is what you Google to sign up. I encourage everyone in the 18 to 44 age group to please consider signing up. You can save lives. It's real easy to get a sample in and be a donor. And I found out recently that my donor was German. And that explains to me, Pat, why I've had this overwhelming desire to go to Oktoberfest this year. But that may be a coincidence. I have had some side effects from the disease and treatments. A couple I'd like to highlight. I am shorter. My back's a little bit crooked. I've got metal holding some bones together. Had a hip replaced from long-term use of steroids. But the one that a lot of us aren't aware of, at least I wasn't, was after a stem cell transplant, we're at high risk for skin cancer. And lo and behold, I've had about a dozen spots removed from me that were some sort of, pre-cancer or the mild form of cancers, not skin cancers, not the bad one, but the basal and the squamous I've had. So that's a heads up if you've had a transplant and you're lucky enough to live for a while. Think about having a dermatologist check out your skin, which I do on a routine basis now. The last one I want to also point out, it's kind of weird, but because of my aloe transplant, my last one, I've got ocular graft versus host disease. I could barely see. I couldn't drive a car, and I'm now wearing prosthetic devices in both eyes that have returned my sight to normal. So that's a real blessing. That just happened. So really, in light of that, was it worth it? Hell yes, it was worth it. Being with Kathleen, being at our son's weddings, seeing the grandchildren, playing with them, it's absolutely worth it. A couple things, maybe tips to take away, like Kathleen gave you. We believe and strive to be equal partners with the medical team. We don't try to be bossy, but on the other hand, we think our say counts too. We've been fortunate to have doctors who have allowed us to do that and encouraged us. I ask a lot of questions, and I capture as much information as I can. Certainly setting goals is absolutely necessary for us. And exercise is a daily activity for me. And I know some days when you're hospitalized, you're flat in your back, it seems like a funny comment, but I make myself do whatever I can. And to me, I think that's helpful to surviving. My case is not typical. That's not what I'm trying to say. And yes, I've been lucky. But I think of the famous golf instructor who's now departed, Harvey Pienick. And he talked about luck when a professional golfer is facing a 30, 40, 50-foot putt across a rolling green. Sure, the golfer's lucky if the ball drops in. But Harvey's point was you've got to hit that ball hard enough to get to the hole to give luck a chance. And that, in a nutshell, is I think what we've done. We've done second opinions. We've done clinical trials. We've done exercise. We identified a myeloma doctor who's got a lot of myeloma patients. And I'm blessed to have the greatest caregiver in the world, Kathleen. So, yes, we've given luck a chance, and that's all we can do. So I thank you, and Kathleen thanks you for listening, and we really appreciate the opportunity to share our story. Thanks, Pat.
Well, you bet, Jim. And, you know, I just want to share with listeners a couple things. Number one, Jim is one tough little guy. Hey, I can say little because I'm no NFL lineman myself, but Jim, you are one of the toughest people I know. You have been through a lot, and you just have a burning desire to live. And the story you just shared about your last transplant, I think highlights that point.
Well, thank you, Pat.
The word stubborn comes to mind too.
Well,
That's okay.
Cindy, you know this. You know this couple. Come up with a couple adjectives of your own.
Oh, they're wonderful. Like I said before, Jim Bond was the one who saved my life because it was him who enrolled in a trial of a drug that they were thinking about not even going on, and that's when he responded so positively to that trial. And it's a drug that helped me. So I am forever thankful for him and his passion for enrolling in trials because I think that's our future, you know. That's going to lead us to a cure. And I love hearing stories because every time I hear someone's story, it convinces me of something else. And no matter how much I read on the Internet and my logical mind tells me that exercise is something that's important and I should be doing every day, sometimes I get in that habit like, well, I don't have time. But hearing Jim's story just now about the thing that determined whether or not he was going to have that life-saving allo transplant that he had for his leukemia was the fact that he just did the PAN Ohio, is that what it's called?
Yes.
Race?
PAN Ohio.
Yeah, that like, you know, that story is going to ever live in my mind. And every time I think I'm a little bit too tired or I have too much on my plate, I'm going to think of that story. Stories are very, very powerful, you know.
Thank you, sir.
It is very inspirational. When we were in Boston, a group of survivors got together in Boston. We do every year for the Light the Night, the LLS Light the Night program. And Jim was down, and I was down working out in the health club at the hotel. And Jim was, I noticed he was on a bike at the other end of the facility, and I walked down. Before I got there, I just stopped and watched him, and he was pedaling at about a half mile an hour. I mean, this wasn't that far removed from his transplant, you know, and he was sitting there and just slowly making those pedals go around. I bet you were pedaling at, 15 cycles a minute or something. I mean, you could barely push those pedals. But you know what? The guy was on the bike pushing those pedals, no matter how slow, as hard as he could. And I think that really hit me. I'll never get that image out of my head, Jim. That was that was very inspirational for me, just the determination that you had to get back on that bike and do your bike ride and to live and spend time with your family. It is truly inspirational, and I think most of us have Jim Bond stories tucked away someplace.
Yes, we do. And the other thing I wanted to bring to light, too, is what Jim, the chemo brain sometimes gets in my way. I think it was Jim that mentioned it, not Kathleen, but one of them mentioned the fact that sometimes patients are hesitant to move out of town for a clinical trial because of the cost of housing. And they were talking about the American Cancer Society's Hope Lodge, which is such a wonderful program. And, you know, I think it's something that we need to bring to light to many patients, because I know when I was first diagnosed, I wouldn't think of moving because I didn't have the funds. But because of programs like the Hope Lodge, it makes it possible. And the other thing that I wanted to mention, too, for maybe patients who are listening in that aren't available, that don't know some of the available resources, that there are also some free flights. Different American Airlines will provide free flights to cancer patients to get them to some of the major treatment facilities so that they won't have to worry about how much they would have to pay for that flight. So there are resources available out there for us to get to where we need to be so that we can participate in those trials.
Oh, Cindy, those are excellent points. I don't know if I neglected to say that when you're in Hope Lodge, there's over 30 of them, but you stay for free with your caregiver. And it's a community feeling where everybody's in it together, and it's a wonderful home away from home. And that's really what drives me, Pat, to keep cycling is I've been fortunate to have access in where I live and where I've been able to go, but other people I know have not, and I've seen the results of not getting the leading treatments that are out there. And so I'm really committed to giving others the kind of chance that we've had, and I will keep pedaling as long as I can.
I know we all appreciate that. I was going to ask Kathleen, are you still on the American Cancer Society Board of Directors?
I am for our East Central Division, which is we have 11 divisions for the American Cancer Society, which is Ohio and Pennsylvania. I'm no longer on the
National. Is the Hope Lodge part of that program?
Yes, we have 4 Hope Lodges in our East Central Division. There's 2 in Pennsylvania and 2 in Ohio.
Now, that's great.
And there,
can you add anything more about that program? Have we missed anything?
I think Jim said it well. It gives you access to care, and it's no-cost lodging. And oftentimes the patient's in the hospital, but the loved one caregiver stays at the lodge. And it enables the patient to know that their caregiver, loved one, is in a safe place and is finding support amongst the other residents of the Hope Lodge. You can't make reservations like a hotel. You do have to be referred through the hospital. Usually it's the social worker. And there's no income requirement. It's really who needs a place to stay. And I've talked to a lot of people who this has made the difference in their treatment, because they were able to go out of town to access leading-edge treatment or access a clinical trial that they don't have in their little hometown. They don't have access to it, but they can go to one of the major cancer centers and be in a trial that can save their life. So there's some magical things that take place at these Hope Lodges. It's great.
We have a beautiful facility here adjoining Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa.
Yes.
Know that. And on the call.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, I know there's two in Florida, maybe. Well, there's 3 in Florida. So Florida's got 3, and we're actually, the American Cancer Society will be building more of these, and we are looking to build them near major cancer centers, because that's where a lot of people need to go for the latest treatments and for the clinical trials. So there'll be more coming up. There's about 5 more on the drawing board right now across the country. But it's a wonderful program.
That's wonderful, yeah. And that's why I wanted to highlight that, so that there is hope. That's why they call it a Hope Lodge. There is hope for people who are out of town to be able to access those life-saving treatments. And No, I before I was kind of wishy-washy in what I was saying, so I looked it up online. The names of the air free medical transportation are called Angel Flight.
Right.
And Southwest Airlines also does medical flights. And there's also something that's called the Corporate Angel Network, where you could, if there is a spot on a corporate jet and you're going to an area where they could go, you could get a free flight there. So there are resources out there for patients that really need the help to get where they need to go.
Excellent points.
Before I forget, oh, I'm sorry, Cindy, do you want to go ahead?
You can go ahead.
I wanted to note that Jim mentioned that he had the graft versus host disease, the reaction in his eyes, and Jim and Kathleen were kind enough to forward me some information about that, and I believe it was either the beginning of this month or the end of last month. I wrote a pair of posts about that on my blog, highlighting some of the amazing, not only things that Jim had to go through, but the help that he received. I believe it was up in Boston. Who wants to jump in and tell us about that?
Yeah, Pat, I would love to. There's really two places, and how did I get to these places? Simply by asking questions of my team here in Cleveland and listening to their answers, and then, as Kathleen said, she did a little bit of research on who the names were that we were given, and she was able to find out, well, you know what, all these people were trained up in Boston, and we zeroed in on the guy who was doing all the training on ocular graft versus host, and he was at Mass Eye and Ear Institute, which is affiliated with Mass General Hospital. And I saw him, and he gave me some stuff, and it helped a little bit. Then he said, okay, you're ready to try these prosthetic devices that I wanted to hold off because it's going to be hard for you. You've never worn contacts, and it's out in the suburb, and this place is called the Boston Foundation for Sight. And there, you can Google that, or you can go to bostonsight.org. And I want to tell you, if you've got my problem, which is a cornea problem, very dry, very scratched up cornea from the graft versus host, it is life-changing for me. And it took me 3 weeks and Kathleen's help to learn how to insert and remove these things every day. But, again, it's determination, perseverance, and, you know, you go through it and it's worth it because now I can see. And it'll be much easier riding my bike this year. It was kind of tough last year. I had to follow somebody.
I have to tell you, Pat, that Jim riding that bike last year, I didn't realize how poor his vision was. And it shakes me up to think how he actually made it. But he got lost a few times. Now I know why. But, again, he was pedaling very slowly, and there were times where I didn't see how he could keep the bike upright because he was pedaling so slowly. Well, it turned out the reason he was pedaling so slowly is because he could not see and didn't want to hit something on the pavement. So the fact that his vision was so poor was causing him to really slow down. So it was just amazing how he managed to get through this 4-day of bike riding, but he did.
Yeah, but medical science is out there, and it's really I look at our part. I said I like to be an equal partner with the medical team. We like to be. I think my responsibility, our responsibility is, you know, we've got to advocate for our own cause. I mean, when it's time to say, hey, my eyes, I can't see, I need to do something, we don't wait for somebody to come to us and say, oh, here's your answer. We get on it, and we treat it like anything else. We make it a project. And what's out there is just totally startling to me. I mean, medical science has done so much, and we can do a lot by knowing our case better than anybody because we live our case, all of us. So we can really help that medical team by getting in there and doing our bit. And like Kathleen said, you make these relationships out of town with a second opinion guy or gal, and you stay with them.
Yeah, it's a resource. It's a great resource.
We
contact them when we want to know more information about something or, you know, have they heard something. It's really part of another thing that I think is very important is keeping your eye on the horizon. Always know what's out there because there's new things coming out. There's, you know, things are finding out all the time, and we're in a good place right now, but we are never complacent. We always make sure we know what's on the horizon, so if Jim's disease becomes active again, we know who we're going to call and what we're going to talk about.
The patient has to do some heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And caregiver, right? I mean, it's amazing, but it's not fair. You've got cancer, and then you're supposed to be an expert in your field, so to speak, or take 3 weeks to try to learn how to use a device that's going to change your life. But it's a lot of work. It's hard. It's just really hard. And you two make it sound easy, but it's not.
None of this is easy.
No, Pat, it's very hard. And a transplant's hard, and four of them were very hard. The leukemia one was harder than the myeloma ones because of the drugs they gave me to get me ready. And, that, you know, 75 days consecutive in a hospital is no fun. But to get back to your exercise comment, Cindy, my transplant doctor told me, he said, Jim, the reason you got through this is because you made yourself get out of bed every day. On days you didn't feel like it, you did. And some days that wasn't a lot of walking. But
some days it was just getting up and sitting in a chair in the room. That was the highlight of the day.
But we've been asking, we volunteer to be on the local cancer hospital advisory board here at University Hospitals in Cleveland. And when they build a new cancer center, one of the things we pushed hard for and they decided to go along with is there's a workout room on the transplant floor of the
site. That's wonderful. Oh, that'd be great.
It's there.
Yeah, it's there.
It's there. And there's some restrictions to when you can use it, but every day I was allowed to use it, I was on another stationary bike, Pat, or a treadmill. And, no, I wasn't going fast. But when my transplant doctor tells me this is why you made it through, and he's asked me to speak to other folks going through transplants about exercise, and I'm committed to it. And some days I don't feel like it, but I do it anyhow.
This doctor actually said he could get other patients on this floor to get out of bed and walk the hall like you've done. They would all be better off. So it's pretty stunning what getting up and moving your body around does to help your body understand, hey, I'm supposed to start working and fight this thing.
I'll tell you another comment that shocked me from my first and longtime tenure oncologist here in Cleveland. He said, Jim, I know you've done a lot of things and drugs, clinical trials, all that, and that's great. But he said, one of the things I think is a leading reason why you're alive today is you're the most compliant patient I've ever had. And this guy had a long career as an oncologist. And I was shocked. I said, you're kidding. Other people don't comply with what they're supposed to be doing. And he said, you'd be amazed. And for what it's worth, I mean, taking those drugs when you're supposed to and doing what you're supposed to do, I mean, I'm not the most go-along guy in the world, but once I agree to something, by gosh, I'm going to do it. And he noticed that, and I was shocked when he said other patients don't do that. So for what it's worth, I mean, there's one oncologist who I have a high degree of respect for, thinks that was crucial to being alive.
That is very worthwhile advice. Cindy, I was going to ask you, how are you doing? How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. To me, it's very, very boring. I'm always the same, you know what I'm saying? Which is good. I've learned to accept that stable is good, and if what I'm doing is keeping me right there, then I'm not going to complain. So I'm doing good right now.
That's great. I thought your numbers had started creeping up a bit.
They did, and then they kind of stabilized there, and then they went down. And, you know, my doctors tell me that, like, when you go up from my M spike was, like, around a 0.4, and it went up to a 0.5. They say, you know, it went up, but they tell me not to worry. Of course, you know, I worry a little bit, but then it stabilized at 0.5, and that's where it is, and it hasn't moved since then. So, you know, my docs were thinking it was going to, and once again, that's where your docs could sometimes be wrong. They were thinking it was the beginning of a trend. it was in the beginning of the trend at that point.
Right.
You know, I stabilized and I was pretty good. So
that's good news.
Yeah, I have another appointment with one of my specialists this week, you know, because we're trying to think, and that's where the question is now. I see two doctors, and sometimes they don't agree with each other, and sometimes I'm the one that has to make the opinion, and sometimes that's hard, you know what I'm saying? Because these are big doctors in the field. They're specialists. They're the ones that write the papers, and we all know not everyone agrees on everything, and I'm just learning that I'm the one that has to make that final choice, and my doctor is not going to be upset with me if I do not follow his directions, and I could still stay their patient, you know, and it took me a while to feel that way. How about Jim? Did that ever occur that your doctor recommended one thing and you decided to go another way? And
yes,
it's
happened a couple times. Once I mentioned a doctor here who's very good, did my first three transplants. He said, it's time to go to a hospice. He said, don't waste your time trying to find an opening on that clinical trial. And
right.
I disagreed, and he was miffed, but I didn't care. Second one that comes to mind is I found out that my hip needed replaced, and it was because of long-term use of steroids, according to the hip doctor. So I challenged my doctor from then on every regimen I have. They always want to throw a steroid in the mix. And I said, well, what if we try it without the steroid and see how I do? And we can always add the steroid if it doesn't work. And I got pushback on that. And I got the doctor to say, I don't agree with you, but I don't think you're going to kill yourself, but I'll let you know if it gets to the point where I think you're really endangering your life. And then the other one I can think of is where he wanted to take me off one drug I was on. This is long way out, like around 19 years. And he wanted to take me off one drug and put me on another one. I said, whoa. Before we do that, what if we increase the dosage of the drug I'm on? Because the way I look at it is, like Kathleen said, this is a marathon. And
right.
and I want to keep as many things available down the road as I can. So before I jump off of a drug, I want to try increasing that drug. And I got pushback. But guess what? It happened to work, and I got more years out of that drug at a higher dose. So, yeah. I have had disagreements, and yep, you gotta worry about losing the relationship. But this is not like fighting dandruff. This is our lives. So I'm happy if I ruffle some feathers if I think it's gonna do something to give me more time with Kathleen and the kids and grandkids. I'll do it.
Well, a point that Jim just made, I think, is really a good one. Is that we always want to know if we do this, does doing this knock us out of other options? And we always ask that question because you don't want to pick something and decide something knowing you've just knocked out three options you could have had you not done that, made that decision. So we always ask that question, and we kind of feel like we got to ride one horse as long as we can and then jump to another horse if we need to. And that's kind of how we viewed this. And I can give you an example of again, when Jim was up against it and his doctor's telling him to go to a hospice, and we weren't going to hear that, and we found out what options were out there, and we found out about the one drug that was in a trial. We got in that trial, but Jim was so sick. He was running a very high fever. His kidneys were starting to shut down. Jim barely got in the trial. It was by the skin of his teeth. Well, we had to go to Boston. We had very little notice. We quickly had to leave our town because the only place this trial was open in the entire country was in Boston. And as soon as we got to the hotel next to the hospital, it happened to be Dana-Farber, we were in the hotel. I immediately picked up the phone, called the hospital, because I didn't think Jim was going to make it through the night. And it happened to be the doctor on call was Ken Anderson. And Ken Anderson called me right back and told me what to do to get Jim through the night. And he said to me, he said, Mrs. Bond, he said, has anyone told you that your husband is the seventh patient that's been admitted into our study? And I said, no. And he said, well, his study number is 007. And he said, I have to believe that's good karma. And I said, well, I hope so. Well, obviously it was, and because here we are today. But again, that's an example of we were willing to just uproot, and we were fortunate enough that our kids were grown, and we just did it. And, you know, it really comes down to what are you prepared to do? And we were prepared to go that far and do what we needed to do to get over that hurdle, and we did. And, you know, I'm sure we've jumped a few hurdles since then, and I'm sure there's going to be more down the road. But, you know, if we can keep our eye on the horizon, we'll see those hurdles coming, and we'll be able to jump them, hopefully.
Wonderful, wonderful advice. Thank you. And, yeah, we have cancer. There's people act like they're inconvenienced. And you and Jim make a great point. You got to attack this thing. You've got to fight it, and you've got to be willing to do what you've got to do in order to stay alive. And I think sometimes myeloma patients and caregivers are lulled into a little bit of a sense of complacency because at the start, as we all know, for the majority of patients, it's not so bad, and you get that long, you know, that honeymoon period, that long first remission or stable disease, and it sort of lulls you into a sense of complacency. But this is hard, and it's life and death stuff.
The other thing I wanted to mention, because it's something new that's been on my mind, and I heard Jim mention that now, because of anybody that has a transplant, they have to be very careful with skin cancer, and he's had a few of the squamous cells removed. Then I heard him mention that because of long-term use of Dex, he needed a hip replacement because the Dex wears away sometimes at your bones, and then he has graft versus host disease, the ocular one. And the one thing that I've been hearing a lot about lately is survivorship plans, and that, you know, pretty soon, I believe in January of 2015, the medical institutions, the cancer institutions, are going to have to provide patients with survivorship plans where it will be a plan that has your name, it has your treatments that you've been taken, and because of these treatments, it will be saying things that you should look for, other types of doctors that you should be going to, and also included in that survivorship plan will be things specific to you, things that maybe, whether because you're on Dex, you need to look more carefully into your sugar and what your glucose levels are. So this is something that I think is a new term that's been bouncing around a lot. And Kathleen, do you know anything more about this? Have you heard about survivorship plans?
Oh, in fact, I had that as a note in front of me to bring that up, so I'm glad you did. I've been in on some discussions at the American Cancer Society at national office about survivorship plans. And it is something to ask your doctor about, and patients, actually, I think you can go to cancer.org, and they'll give you a sample of them, and you can find out more about them. But it's hugely important, because after Jim had been through, I don't know which transplant, second or third, I can remember saying to him, you know, while everyone's so busy chasing around multiple myeloma, who's to say you don't have a polyp in your colon that needs to be checked on? You know, so I said to Jim, it's time, you're at the age, it's time to get the colonoscopy. You know, there's things that you need to follow up on while you're chasing around myeloma. And certainly from the treatments from the disease, there are side effects. But if you know to look for these things down the road, you can mitigate them as you encounter them. And having that survivorship plan helps you and the doctor keep on task, because there are people that don't understand that you do need to have your skin checked because you had a transplant. There's all kinds of things that need to be followed up with, and having that is a really valuable plan and plan of action if you do have something that comes up. So I know that a lot of cancer centers are implementing these. It certainly is something to discuss with your doctor, and you can go to reputable websites to find out more information, too.
It's really, I think, a happy problem to have, because, frankly, when I was diagnosed back in the dark ages, 92, I really was hoping for 5 years. That was my real hope. And here it is 22 years later. So we're at a position because of the novel drugs, the advances that have been made, people entering clinical trials. We have the luxury of having to worry about skin cancer and having to worry about hip replacements. But let's face it, I mean, keeping us alive is the job one. So I'm okay with my oncologist missing some of these things. And again, I look to myself and I say, okay, what can I do? And yeah, I stumbled on some of these things, luckily, but that's really why we're so anxious to help others. And anybody can contact me anytime they want. It's out there. You don't need my permission or anybody else's, because we can do this. We can empower ourselves, and I think it's our job. And our oncologists have a lot on their plate, and they're keeping us alive, and good for them, and I applaud that effort. So it really is a great example of teamwork, and that's the point where we strive to be with all of our medical.
Well,
and that includes the nurses and the lab.
I was just going to say that this is where the nurse practitioner, the oncology nurses, are just a godsend, because they can help you with a lot of that survivorship plan type detail and things to look for, things to follow up on. But it really is the part of both the family caregiver and the patient to be aware of some of these things. And it's a lot. It can feel very overwhelming, all the things you have to think about. But forewarned is forearmed, and you can get after it if you need to.
Yeah, but like you said before, I think it's up to us as a patient, too, is to be involved and ask, is there a survivorship plan for me? Because I know there are times where I go to the doctors and sometimes they don't give me something. And then when I ask, they go, oh, yeah, here it is. So, like, they just don't think about it. They have other things on their mind. Maybe they don't have a checklist. I need to do this. I need to do that. I need to do that. So as a patient, to come with those questions, to come with those concerns, because I think they're more than willing to help you and accommodate you.
Absolutely. There's no appointment that we go into, Cindy, that we don't have written down questions that we're going to ask the nurse, the doctor. And I've been known to take tape recorders many, many times in with me, get permission from the doc, and all but one have said, sure, they've given me permission. I'm working on that one that's still out there. But that's how we capture the information. They're like nuggets of gold, what we hear these guys say, and they're in a hurry, and they can't always repeat them. But by gosh, you know, we're going to keep at them until we understand them. That's our job, and we're really in a position to be able to do it and look forward to helping others.
Cindy, could you email me some information on survivorship plans? I'd love to do an article on that.
Sure. I'll email you what I have. I believe it's just coming up. It's like something that's coming up. We had someone talk a little bit about survivorship plans at our last meeting, so I'll get in touch with you. Another good website for now, as patients, until their doctors or their hospitals get these plans in order, is called OncoLink, OncoLink.org. And it's powered by the University of Pennsylvania, but on their website, they have a link to the Live Strong Care Plan. And what the Live Strong Care Plan is you can develop your own survivorship plan. You click on the link, and you write down if you know what medications you were on and things like that. And it, based on the input of information that you put in, they will print something out for you. Mine was 12 pages long. It was a basis for me to start with. I plan on asking my big medical centers for their input, but it was something I had in my hand for me to start asking questions about.
Good.
Thank you, Cindy. And I'm guessing I'm going to get the – we're running out of time. Heads up from Priya here shortly, so I want to take this opportunity once again to thank Jim and Kathleen for joining us, and to remind the listeners, one of the nice things about this format is you can, tomorrow I'll post a link back to the broadcast to our on-air support group, and Priya will do the same on the Cure Talk site, and it's nice, it's there for perpetuity, so you can go back if you missed a web address or something something you felt was important. There have been some really very incredible pearls of wisdom this evening, boys and girls, and I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you, bye. Thank you, Jim, Kathleen. Just wonderful having you here.
Thank you.
Pat, thank you so much for your participation. Pat, thank you so much for inviting Jim and Kathleen. It was truly inspiring. I've been listening, and Jim, you're really wonderful. And it was great to have you here. In our support group meeting for May, we'll be talking to dentist and myeloma survivor, Dr. John Killip, on osteonecrosis of jaw and myeloma ducts. Please visit curepanel.kfc.net for more information on the show. We also look forward to having all of you join us on Wednesday, that is the 23rd of April at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, when we'll be talking to Dr. Philip McCarthy on a myeloma broadcast. We have been hearing in the last 1 hour about the importance of exercise and cancer, and I would like to tell the audience that we are working on a show where we are going to discuss the importance of exercise and diagnosis of cancer and some of the clinical trials that are happening with regard to this topic. And this will be aired sometime in June. For more details of upcoming shows, please mail us priya@trialx.com, or you can always visit our website. The link for today's show will be sent via email to all the participants. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night. I'm off to the gym, Jim.
Bye.
Good going. Take care.
Bye-bye. Buick.
Be well.